Before I forget it, Rachel asked me to, that if you would remember her in your prayers. Today is the 10th year anniversary since her mother passed, and she was very close to her mother, so she thinks about her very often. So if you'll remember her in your prayers, that would be greatly appreciated. So my wife has told me, you argue about everything. Those of you that know me, you're probably thinking, that's about right. You argue about everything. It was told to me growing up, you'd argue with a fence post. And I didn't realize that what others perceive to be arguing is just me not knowing when to shut up. And it comes across as an argument, even though I don't really care about winning it, and I'm not trying to fight. It's just that one of my fortes is not keeping my mouth shut, right? Which is probably why I am paid to do this and also paid to talk, you know? Like, it's just one of those things where that's just what I do. Not saying that's right. Not saying that is wise. But what I'm saying is that it is hard for me to just let something go. And so sometimes you gotta let it go. And people, I think in general, have harder times letting some things go than others. And I think that depends on the individual. Some individuals, they may have a little more trouble letting go of anger. I'm not that angry of an individual. So I don't have trouble letting go of anger, but somebody else, they may harbor some anger and that may really stick in there for a long time, which gets to the point of bitterness, right? And as the book of Hebrews says, it gets to the point where it can harden our hearts to the deceitfulness of sin. So some people, they have to let that anger go because maybe that's the way they're done. Or maybe it's people that get their feelings hurt. And they're hurt by somebody else, or they were let down by somebody else, and they're not so much angry about it, but it's like you disappointed me. You failed me on this, and it's hard to ever let that go and not remember that type of situation. Or maybe it's more like me, it's hard for me to let my opinions go. That's the part that's hard for me to keep my mouth shut on, are the things that don't even matter. But I'm like, let me give you my 2 cents anyway, when you didn't ask for my 2 cents. Or maybe you asked for my 2 cents and I still should have kept them shut. But it's just like, just let it go. It's not important. It's not a big deal. Just let it go. But yet it's hard sometimes to do that. Or maybe it's hard to let your children go. Where it's hard to see them grow up. It's hard to give them a little more freedom. It's hard to see them go their own way and you have control, but really not much control. They're now no longer under your roof and in your nest, and they're going to do what they're going to do. While they're in your roof, under your roof and in your nest, you got a pretty good opportunity. But you let them go. And there they are. And maybe you feel helpless about it. Some people, that's easier to let go than others. I don't know where I'm going to be one day in that situation. I like to think I'm going to be okay letting Noah fly. Might be one of those overbearing ones that's tracking him everywhere on a cell phone. Be like, oh, there he is. I'm going to go pick him up. I don't know what I'm going to do in that situation. I like to think I'm going to be able to let him go. But what are we doing? Well, here's the point. Jesus let things go. I want you to think about all the times Jesus could have addressed a false teaching or a misteaching. Jesus could have addressed somebody who had some kind of sin in their life. Jesus could have addressed his apostles about them arguing every day, all day, every day. Or as we read there in 1 Peter chapter 2, when he had done no sin, nor was there any deceit found in his mouth, yet people still reviled him. They still railed against him with their tongues. And what did he not do? Revile in return. He did not utter anything back, and he did not threaten. I want you to think, if Jesus had threatened you or Jesus threatened you, we often say, is that a threat? Most of the time when someone threatens you, do they carry out that threat? I haven't found too many people that have threatened to do something, then they actually do it. Oftentimes it's kind of used as a, well, I'm going to scare you so that you will do what I want you to do, and I don't want to do that anyway. Jesus, if he actually had threatened, guess what he would have done? Just like he did with Jerusalem, wasn't it? The city, Jerusalem, the city that stones the prophets. How I would have gathered you under my wings like a hen gathers her chicks, but you would not. Behold, your house is left desolate. That was a threat. You didn't, and we might even say that was a warning. You did not receive me, and so it's on you. But he didn't go around preaching that very often, did he? He could have. He knew that was going to happen. But he kind of let that go. He didn't address it all the time. And clearly when he's going up to the cross, and when he is on the cross and they are reviling him, what does our text tell us he did there in 1 Peter 2? He kept entrusting his soul to the Creator. He left that up to God. He trusted that what God was going to do about the situation was what was the right thing to do. He could have called 10 legions of angels in that garden, but he did not. He could have come down from that cross, but he did not. He let it go. That's amazing. And not on top of that, not only did he let those things go and not address it, he said, Father, forgive me. That is, Corey was talking about, sometimes it's hard for us to picture Jesus as God. Sometimes it's hard for me to picture Jesus as human. This is one of those instances where you're reviling me, you're blaspheming me, you're cursing me, and I don't say a word. That is not human to me. That is God. But yet, isn't it the interesting thing that he was 100% human and 100% God at that very moment? He was tempted just as we were. And so maybe there's a character in the Bible that we can relate to a little more than Jesus when it comes to a situation of letting things go, when you're being reviled, being spoken against, and you don't say anything back. And as I said this morning in the lesson, it's going to be King David. I want you to turn to 2 Samuel, the 16th chapter. In 2 Samuel chapter 16, I want to give a little background here, just one little sentence background. David's son, Absalom, has now made his coup to take over as the king of Israel. This is all because David had committed adultery, and it actually is 1 Samuel chapter 6, it is 2 Samuel chapter 16, and he had committed adultery with Bathsheba, right? And so the sword was never going to depart from his family. There was going to be all these problems that come about. His own son wants him dead. His city turns on him. And so he asks to flee Jerusalem, and while he is on the way, there is this character by the name of Shimei, who is of the family of Saul. And we know that Saul and David were best buddies, right? No, Saul hated David. David was best buddies with Saul's son, Jonathan. And so you've got Shimei, who is of the family of Saul, come on the scene. I want you to pick up with me here in 2 Samuel chapter 16 and verse 5. So when King David came to Bahurim, there came out a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. And he came and he cursed him continually.
And he threw stones at David and all the servants of King David and all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. And Shimei said as he cursed him, "Get out! Get out, you man of blood, you worthless man! The Lord has avenged on you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has given the kingdom into the hand of your son Absalom. See, this evil is on you, for you are a man of blood." Shimei comes out there, and is Shimei afraid to say anything to the king? He's out there cursing the king. How smart is that? What can the king do to you right there? Squash you like a bug, right? How many of us, and I want you to think about this modern day, how many of us blast politicians? I guarantee you, if that politician was standing right next to us with their people around them, do you know what we would not do? Blast the politician. Shimei has the gumption to blast this politician. He is giving it to David. And not only is he cursing at him, what else is he doing? He's throwing rocks at him. You ever had anybody throwing rocks at you? Yeah, John's back there shaking his head. Anybody like it when they throw rocks at you? Nope. What are they trying to do when they're throwing rocks at you? It's humiliating, right? Get out of town? Trying to do you harm? Can you imagine throwing rocks at a politician? Much less a king who has slain his 10,000s. That was David's reputation, and yet Shimei says, "You deserve all this. You are a bloodthirsty," and I like the King James, or the New King James says, "a rogue." What in the world is a rogue? Literally, a worthless individual. I mean, those are fighting words. Somebody comes up to you, I want you to be honest with yourself. Somebody is throwing rocks at you and calling you worthless. Are you taking that? Or are you coming right back at them with whatever? Well, in his speech of all this, "You deserve it. You are responsible for all the blood that's been shed in the house of Saul." Is that true? Who was responsible for all the blood in the house of Saul? Saul was. You know what the guy that killed Saul did for David? He came running up and saying, "I got him, I killed him," thinking that David was going to be happy about that. And what did that guy get in return? He's done. Because how dare you put your hand against the Lord's anointed? That was David's philosophy. But yet him, as the Lord's anointed, he's got a guy out here yelling against him and throwing rocks at him and following him and kicking up dust at him. How disrespectful. And so we might find ourselves like David's mighty man, Abishai. Abishai, you look there in verse 9. "So Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, 'Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over and take off his head.'" He literally wanted to cut his head off. David would not allow that one. David could not allow that to happen. That is being reviled and not reviling in return. Mind you, maybe a little story of Jesus, the way he responds here. But the king said, "What have I to do with you, sons of Zeruiah?" Remember that time when Jesus is passing through the village of the Samaritans and the Samaritans wouldn't receive him? And James and John said, "Do you want us to call down fire from heaven and destroy them? What do I have to do with you, sons of thunder?" Like, well, who do you think I am? I'm not out here trying to destroy people. And so the king said, if he's cursing because the Lord has said to him, curse David, who then can say, why have you done so? In David's mind, is David an innocent man? He feels like a guilty individual. You can read through the Psalms and you can see that. He feels still maybe guilty for all of this. And to his credit, he doesn't know that Shimei hasn't been sent to curse him. He doesn't know the outcome of all of this. But yet, it's almost like in the New Testament with Gamaliel. When Paul is up there and the insurrection has come up. If this is of God, guess what we're not going to be able to do? We're not going to be able to squash it. But if it's of men, it'll be taken care of. David says it kind of in the opposite. This guy may actually be speaking on behalf of God. And if he is, I can't do anything about that. I cannot fight against the Lord. And that is somebody who, as we saw in 1 Peter 2, is trusting the Lord, isn't it? If this is what is best from the Lord, then that is what should happen and that is what will happen. And that is some serious, serious trust. And so verse 11, David said to Abishai and to all the servants, behold, my own son seeks my life. How much more this Benjaminite? Leave him alone and let him curse, for Jehovah the Lord has told him to. Can you imagine your own child wanting to kill you? This may be too graphic, and so I probably shouldn't say it, but I have to think about it. Remember, maybe it was a month or so ago, it was the anniversary of Marvin's uncle passing. And if you remember that scenario way back when, his uncle was murdered by his cousin. I remember sitting in that funeral and having no idea what in the world to think. What that family must have been going through. I want you to think about it. You survive your child trying to kill you. Man, are you not harboring some kind of resentment? Or is it just, it's my child? David looks at it differently. He says, my own son is trying to kill me. Why wouldn't my perceived enemy's family be wanting to kill me too? And he's like, so if the Lord wants me to be cursed, if this is part of my consequence of my sin, so be it. This is what I will deal with. I will put up with it. I will let it go. And then he says in verse 12, it may be that the Lord will look on the wrong done to me and that Jehovah the Lord will repay me with good for his cursing today. But if he didn't send him, maybe the Lord will look on me favorably. Because I took this. I put up with him, and he'll have to deal with that. He will deal with that, but the Lord will repay me. Notice again the trust in the Lord. Now, let me make one more thing here. This reminds me of the passage in Romans chapter 12 and verse 14. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. How did David bless him in this case? How did he speak well of him? He spoke well of him when Abishai said, this dead dog. That would be probably my inclination, this jerk. Right? David says, the Lord may have told him to do this. That's him speaking well of him. He very well may have been told by the Lord to do this. How many of us, when we have people condemning us, say, you know what? The Lord actually might be, they might actually be right about this, and the Lord might actually want me to change my life. Or do we just look at them as who they are, and we don't listen at all to what they say, Well, maybe they do have something. Bless those who persecute you. Bless them and do not curse. David did not turn around and utter anything back. He said, you know what? He might be speaking for the Lord. How do you think about it? Here's the other thing that I thought was very interesting. David used what we call meekness in this situation. Because on his right hand is a mighty man. On a left hand is his mighty men. And old Shimei is throwing rocks and kicking up dust at him. And he's got Abishai ready to chop his head off. And David says, no, no, no. Man, that is some kind of control, isn't it? That is some kind of strength and power under control. He let it go. Well, as the story goes, Absalom is defeated. David did not want him to die, but he is killed anyway. And so David is coming back to Jerusalem. And so guess who now has to make about face? Old Shimei does. Shimei, it's now time for him to apologize to David. Because if Absalom is not the king is back in place. Do you know what the king is going to do? He probably thinks the king is going to kill him. Because you don't forget somebody throwing rocks at you. So you go to chapter 19 of 2 Samuel. So this battle is taking place on the other side of the Jordan River. And so David and his men are waiting on the ferry, which again that just kind of jumped out at me, the ferry, the ford to bring them over. But he's waiting on them, and you pick up with me now in verse let's start in verse 16. Let's do that. False. Let's go to 13. He says, are you not bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh? God do so to me and more also if you were not the commander of my army, for now you are in the place of Joab. Joab killed his son, and he's now handing it over to Abner. And he swayed the heart of all the men of Judah as one man so that they sent word to the king. The point of all this is David has won the people back over. Now 16. So Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjaminite from Barum, he hurried to come down with the men of Judah to meet King David. What did he do? Hurried. He's got to get there and get there fast. And he came with him 1,000 men from Benjamin. And Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, with his 15 sons and 20 servants, rushed down to the Jordan before the king. He doesn't come alone, does he? But he's not coming with his army. He's coming with his people. So they cross the ford. Now go down to verse 18. So Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king as he was about to cross the Jordan. And he said to the king, let not my lord hold me guilty or remember how your servant did wrong on the day my lord the king left Jerusalem. Do not let the king take it to heart, for your servant knows that I have sinned. Therefore, behold, I've come this day, the first of all the house of Joseph, to come down to meet my lord the king. He hurries, right? And he falls down before him. And he says a lot of different things, right? He's got his posse with him. They are there. And he basically begged David not to remember it. He says, you know what happened on the day you left? Don't remember it and don't let it stick in your heart. Man, that's about face, isn't it? That's taking some courage in one sense to come back before the king to do this. And on top of this, the humility of falling before him in verse 19, before he's cursing him, now he's saying in verse 19, behold, your servant. He now says that he is now going to serve David in this. He's a front runner, isn't he? Whoever is in the front, that's who he's going to serve. Doesn't matter the character, doesn't matter the consistency. Whoever's out front, that's the one he's going to serve. But he calls him his servant. But verse 20 is very important, right? Because he said, you know, I've sinned against you.
And I think about this and I think, man, what in the world would I do if Shimei came up and said that to me? I say, well, were you sorry the other day when you're out cursing me, throwing stones at me? Well, I had to change your heart. Well, what made you change your heart? You won the battle. I would want to question him. Does David question? No, notice the similarities. What happens in the very next verse? Look there in verse, I hope I get the verse there here. I can't even find it in my thing. Oh, verse 20, or 21. So Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, answered, shall not Shimei be put to death for this because he cursed the kings, the Lord's anointed? We're back in the same thing. Abishai says, he deserves to die, David. He cursed you, the Lord's anointed. And David again would not kill him. But David said, verse 22, what have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah, that you should this day be as an adversary to me? What? How is Abishai standing up for David being an adversary, being someone that is against him? When your brother repents, what are you supposed to do? Forgive him. What if your brother is telling you, you don't have to forgive him, he deserves to die for this? Is he your friend? He's not your friend, is he? He's your enemy. He's keeping you between doing what God wants you to do. And as much as he wants to do that, he says, I can't. And so he asks him to spare his life. And the king said, verse 23, you shall not die. And the king gave him his oath. Well, you think about all of this, and you say, how could David forgive a man like this? And what's the answer? Does it matter what the man is like? If someone comes and they humble themselves before me, and they admit that they wronged me, what does God expect me to do? Let it go. He expects me to forgive them. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they do. Shimei thought Absalom was going to get it. Didn't work out that way. Life doesn't always happen the way we think. Doesn't matter the character of the person at the time. If they come and they tell me they're sorry, guess what? Forgive me. So I guess it's the 1 Kings chapter 2. I want you to flip over to 1 Kings 2. In 1 Kings 2, you've got David speaking to Solomon as David is on his deathbed. And I don't know who this guy is, but this guy just used the best picture on the Google images I could find of a dude in a bed that looked like he was about to die. And the things that are on your mind at your deathbed are things that are pretty important to you. Is that right? Those of you that have been by loved ones who have died, you've been around their bed and they know that they are dying. The things that they tell you about are things that are very important to them. Well, in 1 Kings chapter 2, David is telling Solomon the things that are very important to him. Such as verse 5, you know what Joab did, pay him back. You know, verse 7, what happened with the sons of Barzillai. Good. You treat them fair. He says, you also know what happened with old Shimei, verse 8. So pick up with me in verse 8. So there is also with you Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjamite from Bahurim, who cursed me with a grievous curse on the day when I went to Mahanaim. But when he came down to meet me at the Jordan, I swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with the sword. What did David remember? He said, I won't kill you. He remembers the curse. He remembers the guy coming to the Jordan. And he remembers saying, I will not kill you. So verse 9. Now therefore, Solomon, do not hold him guiltless, for you are a wise man. You will know what you ought to do to him. And you shall bring his gray head down with blood to Sheol.
Well, hold on, what? You must not hold him guiltless.
But I thought David forgave him. Don't hold him guiltless.
And by the way, how is Solomon supposed to know what to do?
Solomon, you're wise man.
You know how to deal with this situation. So let me ask you a question. Any idea what in the world you would do? Somebody threatens your father like that. And your father says, now you got to hold him. It's up to you now.
I got nothing.
Well, it's an interesting thing that Solomon does. Solomon opens up an agreement for Shimei to stay alive. I want you to look down in verse 36 here of chapter 2. So in verse 36 here, 1 Kings chapter 2, that the king, this is now Solomon, David is now dead. So the king sent, and he summoned Shimei, and he said to him, build yourself a house in Jerusalem and dwell there, and do not go out from there to any place whatever. For on the day you go out and cross the brook Kidron, know for certain that you shall die, and your blood shall be on your own head. And Shimei said to the king, what you said is good. As my lord the king has said, so will your servant do. So Shimei lived in Jerusalem many days. Well, that's pretty smart, isn't it? Shimei is saying, I'll sign up to live in a house for the rest of my life and in this area so that I don't die. Because you know what Shimei realizes? He should be dead. But he's been spared. He's like, this is a good agreement. You get to pick your own house. And it's even better than house arrest. You can even go kind of around in this little neighborhood. But know for certain, the day you cross it, where is your blood? It's on your own head. It is not on David. It is not on Solomon. It is on you. You have made this agreement. Well, I love how the text goes, verse 39. But it happened, well, I shouldn't say I love it, but it happened at the end of 3 years that two of Shimei's servants ran away, and guess what he did? He went and he chased them. He made it 3 years. And then he broke the covenant. And word gets back to Solomon, and Solomon says to him in verse 44, Solomon says, the king said to Shimei, actually go back to verse 42. He said, did I not make you swear by the Lord and solemnly warn you, saying, know for certain that on the day you go out and go to any place whatever, you shall die. And you said to me, what you said is good, I will obey. So why then have you not kept your oath to the Lord and the commandment which I commanded? Remember that question I said this morning, sometimes it's really difficult when someone asks you why? I wonder what Shimei's real answer was in his head. Why was he willing to go across the brook? Did he forget? Did he think he could get away with it? Why did you break the covenant, the commandment that you entered into? So Solomon said, you know, in your own heart, verse 44, all the harm that you did to David my father. So Jehovah will bring back your harm on your own head. But King Solomon shall be blessed, and the throne of David shall be established before Jehovah forever. And the king commanded Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he went out and he struck him down and he died. And the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. Remember, part of that curse when Shimei comes out is that David had taken the throne away from Saul by blood. What is being proven and shown to Shimei is that David didn't take it. The Lord gave it to him. And the Lord established the kingdom of David, the kingdom of Solomon, in his hands. And he said, you know all that you did to David. And now it's coming back on. You will not get away with cursing the Lord's anointed. So, this leaves me with a puzzling question. did David really let it go? Or did he leave it up to somebody else? I would say he let it go, and who did he leave it up to? Who was the king? Who was the one who was the Lord's servant? I want you to think about this, right? What did he agree to do with Shimei? I will not put you to death. He didn't say you won't die for this. He said, I will not kill you. Man, oh man. That doesn't mean that he didn't do wrong and he wasn't going to be held responsible for it. David forgave him. I think David let it go as much as humanly possible. But we can't get away with sin from God. It will always come back and it will always go. And so on his deathbed, I really do wonder, did he really let it go? I think he did. But I got to tell you, that's a tough one for me. And the truth is, I think it was tough for David. And I think that just goes to show how amazing it is what God is able to do with us. Your sins, I will remember no more. That is insane. But thanks be to God that He doesn't hold on to those to our deathbed. But once He forgives our sins are gone. Gotta let it go. But sometimes it's hard to keep the mouth shut. Sometimes it's hard not to revile and return. But as Jesus did and as David did, and as Peter tells the brethren in chapter 4, verse 19, he who suffers righteously, keep entrusting their soul to a faithful Creator. Trust God that God will avenge it and it will be taken care of. We good with that? Maybe this evening you're ready to be baptized into Jesus and you're ready to have your sins washed away and be part of this so that you do not die eternally. Now would be a great time to do that, or if you need the prayers of the congregation, won't you come now as we stand and as we sing?